Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Tuesday, January 21st, 2020. Coming up this hour.
Global stocks slump as a deadly virus in China weighs on sentiment.
Shares of UBS tumble after earnings miss key targets.
In the UK, expectations for a rate cut fall after strong jobs data.
And the US and France reach a truce in the dispute over digital taxes.
Senators are learning about the rules of impeachment, and Democrats are upset. Plus, a new Iowa poll is good news for Joe Biden. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. Easy win for the Knicks in Cleveland. Another loss for the Nets, beaten by Philadelphia. And we'll find out tonight who's going into the Baseball Hall of Fame.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. On Bloomberg 1130 New York. Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 1061 Boston. Bloomberg 960 San Francisco. Sirius XM 119. And around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Karen Moscow.
And I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by SEI. Since its founding 50 years ago, SEI has provided investment managers and asset owners with robust infrastructure platforms and flexible outsourcing solutions. Go to seic.com/IMS.
And U.S. futures are lower to start the week. It is 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. Right now, S&P futures are down about 13 points. Dow futures down 95. NASDAQ futures down 47. 10-year Treasury up 7/32nds, yield 1.79%. And the yield on the 2-year, 1.54%. NYMEX crude oil is down 1% or 59 cents at $57.95 a barrel. And COMEX gold is down 0.3% or $4.80 at $15.55.50 an ounce. Nathan.
And Karen, worries over a deadly virus in China are weighing on sentiment this morning. At least four people have died, as new evidence points to the coronavirus being more easily transmitted than previously thought. Tim Mo is chief Asia-Pacific equity strategist for Goldman Sachs.
Especially in advance of the Lunar New Year holiday, when many people travel, and just given the greater connectivity we've got globally, the concern about some sort of contagion is not unfounded.
Hundreds of millions of Chinese traditionally travel around the globe for the Lunar New Year holidays, which begin Friday.
Concerns over the deadly virus led to a steep drop in Asian stocks overnight. Bloomberg's Juliet Sally joins us from Singapore with details. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, Karen. Stocks in Hong Kong dropped the most in 2 months while volatility spiked. Sentiment in Hong Kong also dented by Moody's downgrade of the city's rating as a long-term issuer of debt by one notch due to the ongoing political turmoil. Asian tourism and consumer-related stocks were hardest hit during Tuesday's session. Citigroup expects Chinese airport and airline stocks to keep falling near term until there's an official announcement the epidemic is under control, while CMC Markets says Asian stocks are underpriced for a possible spreading of the disease. In Singapore, I'm Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Juliet. Stocks in Japan fell nearly 1% despite a brighter outlook from the Bank of Japan. The central bank left policy unchanged while raising growth projections for the first time in a year. Bloomberg's Chris Anstey has more from Tokyo.
The Bank of Japan upgraded its forecast for 2020 growth to 0.9% from 0.7%. Another thing to flag today is that the Bank of Japan sees somewhat diminished risks from overseas. We can probably assume that this points to the U.S.-China trade deal that was signed a few weeks ago.
The stronger projection means additional stimulus is unlikely, but the BOJ says it could ease policy if risks increase.
Trade tensions between the U.S. and France appear to be easing, with the two countries reaching a truce in their dispute over digital taxes. We get the very latest now from Bloomberg's Tom Busby. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Karen and Nathan. According to a French diplomat, the U.S. and France will not impose punitive tariffs this year. That's after a meeting between Presidents Donald Trump and Emmanuel Macron. Macron says they'll work together to avoid tariff escalation. White House reaction was more muted, saying only that the two leaders agreed it's important to complete negotiations on the digital services tax. I'm Tom Busby, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thank you, Tom. In the UK, traders are lowering bets on a rate cut from the Bank of England after a strong jobs report. Bloomberg's Sebastian Salek joins us live from London with details. Good morning, Sebastian.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. This morning's data shows UK unemployment hitting a record low of 3.8%. The number of people in work surged by 208,000, the most in almost a year, and double the market forecast. That ends a run of weak data and confirms the labour market as the most resilient part of the British economy. Money markets are now pricing a 65% chance that the Bank of England will lower borrowing costs on January the 30th, down from 67% on Monday. Live in London, I'm Sebastian Salik, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Sebastian, thank you. Turning to earnings now, fourth quarter results from UBS missed key targets. Profit and cost efficiency fell short, while the private bank unexpectedly saw $4.7 billion of outflows. Still, UBS CEO Sergio Ermotti remains optimistic.
The fourth quarter, despite being our best fourth quarter since 2010, could not really reverse the trend of 19. So if I look at the full year 2019, I can consider the results solid, considering the very challenging and mixed environment we have been operating in.
Investors, however, are not sharing that optimism. Shares of UBS are down 5% in Zurich.
Meantime, 90 miles away in Davos, the World Economic Forum is underway. The gathering began with the International Monetary Fund trimming its global growth outlook to 3.3%. That is an acceleration from last year as the U.S.-China trade truce lifts the cloud of uncertainty. We spoke with IMF chief economist Geeta Gopinath in Davos.
I mean, there has to be a more comprehensive deal. It has to be durable and long-lasting. Now, if these tensions return, that again will then undo all of the improvements in policy uncertainty that we've seen recently. So it's a bit of a wait and watch at this point.
IMF says risks are now less skewed toward negative outcomes and the slump in manufacturing is bottoming out.
Much more coming up from the World Economic Forum on Bloomberg Surveillance. Tom Keene and Jonathan Farrow are live in Davos, and John joins us now with a preview. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Karen. We'll kick off the show with a focus on a financial sector with Citigroup CEO Mike Corbat, plus Invesco President Marty Flanagan. And we'll be speaking with the CEOs of UPS and Marriott, all coming up at 7 a.m. Wall Street time on Bloomberg Surveillance, on Bloomberg Radio and on Bloomberg Television. Karen.
All right, John, thank you. Also in Davos today, President Trump takes the stage. He addresses the World Economic Forum less than 30 minutes from now, and we'll bring that to you live right here on Bloomberg Daybreak. S&P futures again lower, down about 14 points. Dow futures down 89, NASDAQ futures down 47, and the 10-year Treasury up 7/32, yield 1.79%. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news, and this is Bloomberg.
All right, Karen, thank you. It is 5:07 on Wall Street, and Michael Barr is here with more on what's going on around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell proposed a condensed two-day timetable for opening statements in President Trump's impeachment trial and delayed any votes on witnesses until later rather than up front, as Democrats demanded. House trial managers, along with President Trump's legal team, will get 24 hours for opening arguments. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer called the resolution a cover-up, a national disgrace, and touched on Republicans backing the president.
A trial where there's no evidence, no existing record, and no new evidence, no witnesses, no documents. That isn't a trial at all. It's a cover-up.
When the trial reconvenes this afternoon in Washington, President Trump will be at the annual World Economic Forum in Switzerland. A new Iowa poll has Joe Biden leading the Democratic presidential race in the first caucus state. Biden has the support of 24% of likely caucus goers polled by Focus on Rural America. Elizabeth Warren is second at 19%, with Pete Buttigieg third at 16%. Meanwhile, former Vice President Biden is urging Democrats to take control of both chambers of Congress. Biden spoke at the 2020 Iowa Brown and Black Presidential Forum presented by Vice News in Des Moines.
It's not just enough for us to go out and beat the Republican and make sure he's out of office, but you got to be able to be value added in bringing back a Democratic Senate.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo was in Colombia visiting with President Duque. Pompeo said the world must continue to support the Venezuelan people's efforts to restore their democracy.
President Duque and I just discussed our commitment, our reaffirmation of a commitment and our shared values. At the top of the agenda was the enormous humanitarian crisis in Venezuela caused by Nicolas Maduro's regime.
Gun rights activists from around the country rallied peacefully at the Virginia Capitol yesterday to protest plans by the state's Democratic leadership to pass gun control legislation. The mood was largely festive, with rallygoers chanting USA. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and on Quick Take by Bloomberg, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thanks. It's 5:09 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's John Stashow.
Nathan, a rare occurrence in Cleveland. Not only a Knicks victory, but an easy one, 106-86. Knicks put it away in the third quarter, outscoring the Cavs 30-14. Six Knicks in double figures. Julius Randle and Marcus Morris both scored 19. Coach Mike Miller on winning big.
I think it helps. I think it helps a lot. It's such a mental grind of this, of being in those games and the preparation, not even the physical part of it. I mean, the physical toll that it takes as well. So I think it's great. It's great that they feel good about, you know, what they've done, and so many people contributed. It's a good team win.
In Philadelphia, Nets led by 12. Back came the Sixers to win 117-111. Huge game for Ben Simmons. 34 points and a triple-double. Nets were without Kyrie Irving. He's back on the shelf, this time with a hamstring injury. And Portland's overtime win over Golden State, 61 points for the Blazers' Damian Lillard. The Lakers lost in Boston by 32, and now LeBron and the Lakers make their only visit to New York. They're at the Garden tomorrow. They're in Brooklyn Thursday. Tonight at the Garden, last game before the All-Star break for the Rangers and Islanders. Their third meet in the last 9 days, with the Rangers having won the first two. Australian Open, Rafael Nadal trying to win his 20th Grand Slam, which would tie Roger Federer's record. Nadal won his first round match. We'll find out tonight who's going to the Baseball Hall of Fame. The question with Derek Jeter is not if he gets in, but what his vote total is. Will it be unanimous, like Mariano Rivera was a year ago? For the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Nathan?
All right, John, thanks. We are just 12 days away from the big game. Here is what you need to know about Super Bowl 54. It is the seventh Super Bowl appearance for the San Francisco 49ers and the first for the Chiefs of Kansas City in 50 years. Each member of the winning team will get $118,000. According to SeatGeek, the average ticket price for you to see the game live is anywhere from $4,000 to $5,000. And Shakira and Jennifer Lopez will be this year's halftime performers for Super Bowl 54. S&P futures are lower by almost 14 points right now. Dow futures down 86. NASDAQ futures a loss of almost 48 points. 10-year Treasury yield 1.79%. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And Daybreak is brought to you by Land Rover. Life's an adventure. Experience it in the new Land Rover Discovery Sport. Visit your tri-state area Land Rover retailer for details on the new Discovery Sport. Land Rover, above and beyond.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and on Quick Take by Bloomberg. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. European stocks are dropping alongside U.S. stock index futures, tracking broad declines across Asia amid a series of negative developments in Hong Kong and worries about a deadly virus in China. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are down 13 points this morning. Dow futures down 83. NASDAQ futures down 45. The DAX in Germany is down 0.4%. 10-year Treasury up 6/32, yield 1.79%. Yield on the two-year, 1.53%. NYMEX crude oil is down 1% or 59 cents at $57.95 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 0.3% or $4.60 at $15.55.70 an ounce. The euro, 1.1095 against the dollar. The British pound, 1.3043. And the yen is at 109.98. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. The third impeachment trial of a president in U.S. history is set to start inside the Senate in just a matter of hours. Within 2 days, each side will introduce their opening arguments, giving the president's legal team their first chance to present their case in front of the Senate. China's mysterious respiratory virus has caused six deaths and infected a number of medical workers, a sign the outbreak has entered a new phase with the illness spreading from person to person. Healthcare workers contracting the new illness indicates that it is more easily transmitted than previously thought, bringing the disease, part of the coronavirus family, to a higher risk. In sports in the NBA, the Nets lost. The Knicks won, along with the Celtics and Wizards. The Warriors lost in overtime. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and on Quick Take by Bloomberg, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thank you. It is 5:19 on Wall Street and live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. Matt Maley joins us this morning after Martin Luther King Day, equity strategist at Miller Tabak. Nice to have you with us, Matt. Michael just mentioned the latest on the coronavirus that really seems to be be weighing on market sentiment this morning. How long do you think that the concern about this illness will affect trading on Wall Street?
Well, it could be a while. I mean, of course, the one thing we have to be – and when any new development comes out on any issue, one of the key things is where is the market at the time? And right now the market is very overbought. It's had this great run over the last 3 or 4 months, and so it's a little bit more vulnerable to news like this. And, I mean, it's vulnerable to a pullback anyway just to work off some of that overbought condition. So when something like this comes out, especially when it's so unknown, how long will it last? How long, you know, how bad will it get? It raises a completely new uncertainty, and uncertainties are not good for the market, especially when they're overbought.
Is it an uncertainty that has you advising clients to adjust their positions?
Well, I don't think yet that that's going to be something you want to do, but it is something you want to be prepared to take care of in advance. And the reason why I mention that is because this market has been, you know, the rally has been great, but has not been justified by the underlying fundamentals. It has been powered by momentum and central bank liquidity. And I mean, we saw last week when Stanley Druckenmiller and David Tepper were talking about how much they love the market here, and I think we'll go a lot further. That's great, but you notice that none of their reasoning had anything to do with the improvement in fundamentals. They just talked about momentum and that liquidity.
What sectors do you see as most vulnerable right now?
Well, I mean, again, talking about the market being way overbought, and I don't want to talk, when I say vulnerable, the high-flying tech stocks are obviously the ones that stand out to me, simply because they've had this great run. That doesn't mean that we're going to get a huge correction or bear market in those groups, but it is something in the tech stock, but stocks. But I do believe it's something that could get hit more than the rest of the market if this China virus or something else does cause a deeper correction than we've seen in quite a while.
Are you thinking that we could see a correction in the broader market?
Well, it's correction. It may be too strong because we always say about that being 10% or more. But I do think we're very vulnerable at some point soon to a real pullback on the market of you know, 7% or more, 7 or 8%. And again, it may not come for a little while. It may not come for quite a while because of this liquidity that the Fed is providing. But I do think it's essential because I do not believe, like some people, that the Fed will just going to continue to provide liquidity endlessly for the market to go up forever. When they do step back, it's going to hurt the market. And right now, they're providing that liquidity to help the repo markets because we don't have a system without the repo markets. When they find a way to help stabilize that without all that liquidity, that's going to be tough on the stock market.
So you've been talking a lot about the liquidity in the market and the risk of being overbought in this market. Are you thinking that the market might be running too hot at this point and that the Fed could step in sometime this year? We've heard from another number of people who think that the Fed is probably going to stay on the sidelines through 2020.
Well, staying on the sidelines, there's two different ways to interpret that. Number one is, are they going to step in and do something in terms of raising rates? I don't expect that. I do think they'll stay on the sidelines in that capacity. But when it comes to this liquidity, the QE program that they keep claiming is not a QE program, but it is one. It's one that they don't want another bubble. I strongly believe this market is not fully pricing in underlying fundamentals. It's being pushed by liquidity and momentum, and they don't want that. And so at some point they've got to pull back. And when they do, just like they did when they tightened a few years ago, it will have a negative impact on the stock market.
And we've got about a minute left here. What's your outlook in terms of earnings? We've heard from the banks. We're hearing from a lot of companies this week. How do you see the earnings backdrop right now?
Well, that's the key right now is because the earnings haven't been that great. I mean, the consensus is looking for 9% growth next year. This year, 2020. Of course, they're always too high at the beginning of the year, so that probably means it's going to come in the mid-single digits. And when you look at not just the last year or 2 years, but you look at the last few years, that kind of low earnings growth is not enough. Following a year of zero earnings growth that we had last year is not enough to sustain a significant rally. Again, I'm not calling for the end of the world, a bear market or anything like that, but I do think investors need to have a plan in place in advance if and when we get some kind of a dislocation in the marketplace.
Always good to talk with you, Matt. Thanks so much. That's Matt Maley, equity strategist at Miller Tabak. As we continue to watch a pullback in the markets this morning, S&P futures are lower by 14 points, Dow futures down 89, and NASDAQ futures are lower by almost 48 points. President Trump is due to speak at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland in just a few minutes. His remarks set for 5:30 Wall Street time. We will bring them to you live here on Bloomberg Daybreak. You are listening to Bloomberg Radio. Daybreak is brought to you by the Cove Atlantis. Paradise is an island and closer than you think. Catch a flight to the Bahamas and head to the Cove on Paradise Island. Stay at the Cove. Play at Atlantis. Visit the Cove at AtlantisBahamas.com.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And it is 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We are just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. Stocks are lower around the world amid concerns about a deadly virus in China. At least six people have died as new evidence points to the coronavirus being more easily transmitted than previously thought. We get more from Bloomberg's Selena Wang in Beijing.
There are clearly some concerns from market participants that things could be getting worse, and they're choosing to take some profits in before the Chinese Lunar New Year holiday when you could see more spread of this virus, given the fact that there could be some 3 billion trips as people travel to go see their families.
And stocks in China fell 1.7%. They dropped 2.8% in Hong Kong in U.S. futures, while S&P futures are down 0.4%.
The stocks in Europe are falling for a second day as well. Financial firms are among the biggest losers after earnings from UBS missed key profitability and cost targets. We spoke with CEO Sergio Ermotti.
If you look at what happened on all fronts, I think recalibrating the targets based on the fact that rates are down and not up, the environment is more challenging, is a natural definition.
Right now, shares of UBS are down 5% in Zurich.
In the UK, we have a strong report on the labor market. The employment rate hit a record high after the number of people in work surged by 208,000. That's leading to fewer bets that the Bank of England will cut rates this month.
In Asia, the Bank of Japan kept policy unchanged as expected. The central bank also raised its economic growth forecast for the year.
Here in the U.S., we get earnings from seven companies in the S&P 500, with Netflix headlining that list. And here with the preview is Bloomberg's Larry Kofsky.
A blockbuster slate of content that included high-profile films may help Netflix beat its forecast for fourth-quarter subscriber growth, despite new competition from Disney Plus and Apple TV Plus. Company guidance calls for a global subscriber gain of 7.6 million, down from 8.8 million a year earlier. Larry Kofsky, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Hi, Larry. Thank you. In other news, sources tell us Boeing is close to getting a $10 billion loan. That would shore up the plane maker's finances in the midst of its 737 MAX crisis.
And the world's rich and powerful are in Davos, Switzerland for the World Economic Forum. President Trump delivers a speech at the event in just minutes from now, and we'll bring that to you live right here on Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, now it's 5:32 on Wall Street. Let's get a check of what else is happening around the world. The latest world and national headlines from Bloomberg's Michael Barr.
Thank you very much, Nathan. Republicans have set a fast-paced timeline for the impeachment trial that gets underway today. House trial managers, along with President Trump's legal team, will get 24 hours for opening arguments. Democrats are slamming Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's proposed rules for the proceedings. Democratic Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer says McConnell's guidelines don't even allow for admitting the House record into evidence at the trial. Schumer explained what his party will do when the trial begins today.
Before the resolution is adopted, we will be able to introduce amendments. And we will introduce a whole series of amendments for witnesses, for documents, and other ways to straighten out what McConnell has done and make it a real trial with evidence, witnesses, and in ways that the American people can hear it.
With just 2 weeks to go before the Iowa caucuses, a new Iowa poll from Focus on Rural America has Joe Biden leading the Democratic presidential race. Elizabeth Warren is second at 19%, a four-point drop from her showing in the previous poll. Pete Buttigieg is third at 16%, and Bernie Sanders is in fourth at 12%. Meanwhile, Sanders joined other Democrats at the 2020 Iowa Brown and Black Presidential Forum presented by Vice News. Sanders addressed his concerns about the environment.
There'll be poor people and people of color all over the world who are hardest hit by climate change. But the biggest issue, bigger issue, is it's not only people of color and poor people. It is the fact that climate change is an existential threat to the entire planet.
Senator Amy Klobuchar, who was also at the forum, says one of the first things she would do is pass voting rights legislation. An estimated 22,000 gun rights activists from around the country rallied peacefully at the Virginia Capitol yesterday to protest plans by the state's Democratic leadership to pass gun control legislation. This Florida man drove 14 hours to be at the rally.
I don't feel like I have an appropriate stance to comment because I'm not a Virginian, but I believe like we have to stand with the people of Virginia so they can exercise their First Amendment rights and all their rights, really.
In sports, in the NBA, the Nets lost. The Knicks won along with the Celtics and Wizards. The Warriors lost in overtime. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and on Quick Take by Bloomberg. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thanks very much. It's now 5:35 on Wall Street. The latest edition of Bloomberg Business Week is on newsstands now with the cover on Apollo Global Management CEO Leon Black. Caleb Melby wrote the story for Bloomberg Business Week.
Apollo's really big value add is that they're going for the ones that are so distressed that his competitors, your Kravises, your Icons, are not touching them. And he's going in there, and he and his team are willing to, you know, go through the restructuring battles, go through the bankruptcy battles to try to make a profit.
You can read more about this and other stories in this week's edition of Bloomberg Business Week on newsstands now and online at businessweek.com. Terminal customers can receive a complimentary subscription at MAG Go and listen to Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly weekdays at 2 p.m. Wall Street time here on Bloomberg Radio. It's just before 5:36 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on WHAS in Louisville. Toyota's showering billions of dollars on its American plants in a shift to SUVs.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and on WBBM in Chicago, I'm reporting that a major buyer of jetliners says Boeing should dump the damaged 737 MAX brand name following two fatal crashes.
I'm Roger Hearing on Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We're reporting on better-than-expected UK jobs figures and how that might influence Bank of England plans for a rate cut.
I'm Steve Potusk, and on 1010 Winds in New York, we're looking at Boeing closing in on a $10 billion loan from Citigroup.
And those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. Coming up to 5:37 on Wall Street, now let's get a check on how markets are looking around the world ahead of the open on Wall Street this morning. Karen?
All right, Nathan, thank you. And European stocks, they're dropping alongside U.S. stock index futures, tracking broad declines along across Asia amid a series of negative developments in Hong Kong and worries about a deadly virus in China. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are down 14 points. Dow futures down 87. NASDAQ futures down 47. The DAX in Germany is down 0.5%. The CAC in Paris down 1.1%. And the FTSE 100 down 1.2%. Nikkei 225 in Japan fell 0.9%. The Hang Seng in Hong Kong dropped 2.8%. 10-year Treasury up 6/32. The yield 1.79%. And the yield on the 2-year 1.53%. NYMEX crude oil is dropping 1%. On 59 cents at $57.95 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 0.3% or $4.40 at $15.55.90 an ounce. The euro 1.1106 against the dollar. British pound 1.3046. And the yen is at 109.98. Nathan.
All right, Karen, thank you. It is 5:38 on Wall Street. This risk-off mood in the markets this morning comes as the World Economic Forum gets underway in Davos, Switzerland. We're awaiting opening remarks from President Donald Donald Trump. As soon as those begin, we'll bring them to you live. But this gathering began with the International Monetary Fund trimming its global growth outlook to 3.3%. We're speaking with several leaders in economics and finance in Davos, including Fidelity CEO Ann Richards. She concurs with the IMF's general outlook, but also says looser policy from the Federal Reserve should help sustain growth. Richard spoke with Bloomberg's Francine Lacroix. Here's some of what she had to say.
I think you're seeing some of the global leading indicators beginning to roll over slightly. And in a way, this is what, for example, the US, the Fed signaled last year when it moved from a tightening stance to a loosening stance, if you like. So in a way, we shouldn't be surprised that there's been a little bit of a pullback. But what we saw from the Fed's action last year is how rapidly markets respond to that increase in liquidity that came from the loosening stance that they adopted. So I think our feeling for this year is that we're still going to be in a positive growth scenario. We're going to escape recession. But nonetheless, what we're seeing from the IMF, I think, wouldn't be a surprise to us. It is where the leading indicators are pointing.
So are we going to see a lot of volatility in the markets? We started off 2020 with quite a volatile environment, but you could argue, given the geopolitical risks that we had, the market kind of held their own.
When you've had an environment like this where asset prices have risen once again, I mean, 2019 was a terrific year for just about every asset class that you can imagine. So when you've had a year like that where you've seen, in a way, asset prices rise probably ahead of earnings, then you're always a little bit more vulnerable to some degree of volatility and correction because people are locking in profits. So I think that is going to be a little bit of a theme. We've also seen with some of the geopolitical tensions as they've waxed and waned that markets have reflected that. So it wouldn't be a surprise if we saw market setbacks at certain moments during 2020, but it doesn't feel like the pieces are in place for a substantial market correction unless there's something meaningfully different in the current shape of that global economic and indeed geopolitical picture.
And Richard, you always talked about sustainability. Mm-hmm. BlackRock also coming out last week saying they will actually not only look at sustainability but look at the companies. Basically, it's much more concrete action. How will your industry change in dealing with climate change and sustainability?
Well, you've seen across the industry really for the last, I would say, 3 or 4 years, there has been a meaningful coming together, a meaningful attempt at greater collaboration across the industry, whether it's the Task Force on Climate-Related Financial Disclosure or Climate Action 100. These are things where, we've been signed up for a long time.
This analysis of the latest legal news by subscribing to the Bloomberg Law Podcast or downloading the show at Bloomberg.com/podcast. And attorneys can find exceptional legal research and business development tools at BloombergLaw.com. Nathan.
All right, Karen, thank you. It is 5:47 on Wall Street. We're heading now to the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, where President Donald Trump is taking his seat on the stage before the audience of global leaders. He is being introduced now. Let's listen in.
The beautiful Swiss Alps, and we have arranged for you the best sunshine which we can offer. We are pleased that you have chosen to join us again, this time for the opening session of the 50th annual meeting of the World Economic Forum in Davos. It is a honor to host you, Mr. President, on this very special occasion. And you have here in the room and in some overflow rooms, you have really the best of what the global business community can offer, in addition to over 300 representatives from governments. You return to Davos accompanied by a strong delegation of cabinet secretaries and senior officials, is testimony to the fact that you recognize the need for America to maintain a prominent role on the global stage. In the past 3 years, the United States, by any metric, experienced a story of economic growth and dynamism. Stock market performance alone is one indication, as is the record low unemployment rate. Investors are showing deep confidence in the short and long-term potential of the U.S. economy. Yet, Mr. President, with this good news, we all know there remain challenges ahead for the United States and for the rest of the world.
We look forward to hearing your reflection as we gather here at this crucial time. Please, ladies and gentlemen, welcome Donald J. Trump, the 45th President of the United States.
This is the organizer of the World Economic Forum, founder of the event, Klaus Schwab, introducing President Donald Trump as he steps to the podium now to address the World Economic Forum in Davos.
Thank you very much, Klaus, and very special congratulations on your 50th year hosting the annual meeting of the World Economic Forum, a truly amazing achievement. It's an honor to address the distinguished members of this organization for the second time as president. When I spoke at this forum 2 years ago, I told you that we had launched the Great American Comeback. Today, I'm proud to declare that the United States is in the midst of an economic boom, the likes of which the world has never seen before. We've regained our stride, rediscovered our spirit, and reawakened the powerful machinery of American enterprise. America is thriving, America is flourishing, and yes, America is winning again like never before. Just last week alone, the United States concluded two extraordinary trade deals, the agreement with China and the United States-Mexico-Canada agreement, the two biggest trade deals ever made. They just happened to get done in the same week. These agreements represent a new model of trade for the 21st century, agreements that are fair, reciprocal, and that prioritize the needs of workers and families. America's economic turnaround has been nothing short of spectacular. When I took office 3 years ago, America's economy was in a rather dismal state. Under the previous administration, nearly 200,000 manufacturing jobs had vanished. Wages were flat or falling. Almost 5 million more Americans had left the labor force than had gotten jobs, and more than 10 million people had been added to the food stamp rolls. The experts predicted a decade of very, very slow growth, or maybe even negative growth, high unemployment and a dwindling workforce, and very much a shrinking middle class. Millions of hardworking ordinary citizens felt neglected, betrayed, forgotten. They were rapidly losing faith in the system. Before my presidency began, the outlook for many nations was bleak. Top economists warned of a protracted worldwide recession. The World Bank lowered its projections for global growth to a number that nobody wanted to even think about. Pessimism had taken root deep in the minds of leading thinkers, business leaders, and policymakers. Yet despite all of the cynics, I had never been more confident in America's future. I knew we were on the verge of a profound economic resurgence if we did things right, one that would generate a historic wave of investment, wage growth, and job creation. I knew that if we unleashed the potential of our people, if we cut taxes, slashed regulations, and we did that at a level that's never been done before in the history of our country in a short period of time, fixed broken trade deals, and fully tapped American energy, that prosperity would come thundering back at a record speed. And that is exactly what we did, and that is exactly what happened. Since my election, America has gained over 7 million jobs, a number unthinkable. I wouldn't say it, I wouldn't talk about it, but that was a number that I had in mind. The projection was 2 million, we did 7, more than 3 times the government's own projections. The unemployment rate is now less than 3.5%, and at 3.5%, that's a number that is the lowest in more than 50 years. The average unemployment rate for my administration is the lowest for any U.S. president in recorded history. We started off with reasonably high rate. For the first time in decades, we are no longer simply concentrating wealth in the hands of a few. We're concentrating and creating the most inclusive economy ever to exist. We are lifting up Americans of every race, color, religion, and creed. Unemployment rates among African Americans, Hispanic Americans, and Asian Americans have all reached record lows. African American youth unemployment has reached the lowest it's ever been in the history of our country. African American poverty has plummeted to the lowest rate ever recorded. The unemployment rate for women reached the lowest level since 1953, and women now comprise a majority of the American workforce. That's for the first time. The unemployment rate for veterans has dropped to a record low. The unemployment rate for disabled Americans has reached an all-time record low. Workers without a high school diploma have achieved the lowest unemployment rate recorded in U.S. history. Wages are rising across the board, and those at the bottom of the income ladder are enjoying the percentage by far largest gains. Workers' wages are now growing faster than management wages. Earnings growth for the bottom 10% is outpacing the top 10%, something that has not happened. Paychecks for high school graduates are rising faster than for college graduates. Young Americans just entering the workforce are also sharing in America's extraordinary prosperity. Since I took office, more than 2 million millennials have gotten jobs, and their wages have grown by nearly 5% annually, a number that was unthinkable. Nobody would have ever thought it was possible 3 years ago. A record number of Americans between the ages of 25 and 34 are now working. In the 8 years before I took office, over 300,000 working-age people left the workforce. In just 3 years in my administration, 3.5 million people have joined the workforce. 10 million people have been lifted off welfare in less than 3 years. Celebrating the dignity of work is a fundamental pillar of our agenda. This is a blue-collar boom. Since my election, the net worth of the bottom half of wage earners has increased by plus 47%, three times faster than the increase for the top 1%. Real median household income is at the highest level ever recorded. The American dream is back, bigger, better, and stronger than ever before. No one is benefiting more than America's middle class. We have created 1.2 million manufacturing and construction jobs, a number also unthinkable. After losing 60,000 factories under the previous two administrations, hard to believe when you hear 60,000 factories, America has now gained, in a very short period of time, 12,000 new factories under my administration, and the number is going up rapidly. We'll be beating the 60,000 number that we lost, except these will be bigger, newer, and the latest. Years of economic stagnation have given way to a roaring geyser of opportunity. U.S. stock markets have soared by more than 50%.